Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Jonaclise Caldwell. Jonaclise is the owner of Folia Farm in Rogue River, Oregon. She's the author of The Farmstead Creamery Advisor, The Complete Guide to Building and Running a Small Farm-Based Cheese Business. She also teaches classes in cheese making and goat herd management. First of all, Jonaclise, tell me about Folia Farm and how did you decided to get into the farmstead cheese making business?
Well, we decided that building a farmstead creamery back here on our family land was a way to return to the valley where we live here in southern Oregon. My husband was just finishing up a career in the Marine Corps, and we wanted to come back but didn't know what we'd do. Coincidentally, we happened to have purchased some goats and were milking them, and I was falling in love with cheese making, and my family was falling in love with eating cheese. And also, at the same time, we were just starting to hear a lot more about artisan cheese in the U.S. and how it could be a viable choice. We had this little piece of land up here sitting vacant and came up with the idea, and everybody thought it was a good idea.
How big is the farm that you have?
We live on 24 acres, part of the 220 that I grew up on. It's on mostly forest land with some open pasture area, just right for our size of farm.
And how do you power your farm? I understand that you're off-grid by choice.
Yes. Yeah, we like to call it off-the-grid by choice. Off-the-grid means you produce all the power that you use, usually through solar, which is what we have, solar panels. And also we have a small micro-hydro system that runs off of a seasonal creek that tops us off in the winter. We wanted to live off-the-grid as a way to become aware of power usage and have to moderate your life based on that. We designed our facility around the amount of power we could produce, and any future decisions such as adding rooms or equipment, that has to be assessed first. So it's a different way to live, but we like it.
Uh-huh. And what type of goats do you raise?
We milk and raise Nigerian dwarf dairy goats. They're a relatively new breed, although becoming quite popular because of their easy-to-handle size. They're about half the weight of a regular-sized goat. We got them because our youngest daughter at the time wanted to be involved in the livestock project. And I had grown up with dairy cows and loved cows, but little 9-year-old girl wouldn't be able to handle one of those. And even the big goats are difficult for a little child to handle. So we heard about this breed and got them, and never with the thought of having a licensed dairy at any point. Uh-huh. And like I said, fell in love with the milk, and their milk is amazing. In fact, one of our interns we have here now, she said, "I think I like this breed of goats the best. They're a goat, but they give sheep milk." Oh. And if you know much about cheese, sheep's milk is the epitome of cheese-making milk because of its density. I call them my secret weapon in cheese making.
And how many goats do you have?
We're milking right now about 35, which is our goal. And we were at our goal size originally and just don't ever plan to grow in that regard.
I read on your site that it says if you can't remember all of the names of your goats, that you have too many.
Yes, that's one of our mottos, and quite a few other producers that are hands-on and love their animals have a similar philosophy. Most goat people you'll find love their animals so much, and goat cheese makers typically end up making cheese just as a way to have more goats.
What do they eat? What do the goats eat?
Our goats eat local hays. We have some great people here in the valley near us that raise wonderful grass hay and alfalfa hay. And then they're also, goats are what are called browsers. Cows and sheep graze with their heads down eating grass. And goats are designed to eat at eye level. So they're great little tools to take out in the forest and do some thinning and pruning and take them around to eat blackberries and poison oak and whatever's growing at the time. They do enjoy it.
And then I understand you also kind of hooked up with a beer brewer to get some
Right. Brewer's
grain.
Right, yes. We partner with a brewery here in the valley called Wild River, and they produce some nice beers, and we're lucky enough to be able to go in once a week and pick up a large tub of what is called spent brewer's grain. So it's what remains after they've removed all the beer that's been processed. So a lot of wheat and barley, the goats adore it.
I'm wondering, too, does that affect the flavor of the cheese?
Pretty much everything they eat affects the flavor, but not necessarily in a manner that you can pinpoint.
Uh-huh.
Goats are designed or prefer to eat a very complex, varied diet. So the more varied it is, the more difficult it becomes to identify any one single component of that change. But the variety helps them be healthier also. And, of course, a healthy animal is going to produce better-tasting milk, too.
And then the cheese that you make, it's made with raw milk. How does that work?
In the U.S., it is legal to make raw milk cheeses as long as they're aged over 60 days, and that's the current rule. They are looking at kind of tweaking that a bit, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. So we make 8 cheeses that are aged, most of ours are aged 6 to 8 months. They're mostly hard, semi-hard cheeses, meaning you can slice them or grate them. And then we also do make a brine-aged cheese we call Evans Creek Greek, which is a feta style, but we try not to call it feta.
Oh, okay. And then what are the different types of cheeses that you make in addition to that?
Well, we make, some of our better-known cheeses are Hillis Peak. We name all of our cheeses after local landmarks or things here in Evans Valley, which is a part of the Rogue Valley. And Evans Creek Greek is after our little Evans Valley here. Hillis Peak, one of the mountains, Elk Mountain. We recently have one we call Takelma, which is named after the Native Americans that were here before us, and a couple other seasonal cheeses.
How many pounds of cheese do you make every month?
It's approximately, if you averaged it out over the year, 200 to 400 pounds.
Wow.
So pretty darn small.
Oh, okay. That seems like a lot, but... And how much milk does it take to make a pound of cheese?
Our milk has a yield of what you usually talk in percentages.
Oh, okay.
So like for 100 pounds, 10% yield would be 10 pounds of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Our milk makes about 15 to 18%. So for 100 pounds, you would get about 18 pounds of cheese, which is close to double that of cow milk and regular goat milk. And that's, of course, that is for the drier cheeses. If you're making a fresh, soft cheese, it gets close to double that.
What do you do with the goats that are kind of past their prime on in terms of milk production?
Well, we're fortunate enough to have access to about 4 acres of pasture next door to us, part of the old property I grew up on. And we call that the Island of Misfit Toys, if you remember the Rudolph little...
I do.
Yeah.
I grew up on that.
Yeah, me too. And so we have quite a little collection up there now. Some of them are does that are some favorites, old ladies, and some wethers, which are castrated males. That's the term for that.
Uh-huh.
Just cute pets, and they provide a service in keeping that neighbor's pasture cleaned down and fire prevention and seem quite happy up there. And the little boys that are born to us during the year that aren't meant to be breeding stock,
mm-hmm,
go to pet homes. Fortunately, they're small and cute, and people do love goats as pets.
They do.
I'm not against them going as food animals if they're treated properly, but luckily we haven't had to do that.
That's great. And now it's a little unusual for businesses to share information, but it sounds like that's kind of one of the things that you think is pretty important is to share the information that you've learned about having a farmstead cheese-making business.
Right. Well, I remember when we were trying to learn, those that did share with us, I was so grateful. And those people are still part of our community of cheesemakers, and I realize that it's something that the more people that are doing it well, the more it helps all of us. And you truly can't have a threat of competition in a business where you're doing something at such an artisan level, because everybody's product will be different. Their animals are eating different things. As long as people are doing it well, they deserve to have a place in the market, too.
That's great. Well, we're going to come back next week, and we're going to talk more about what people should know before they go into the business. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Jonicles Caldwell.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.